Peace, Chawa, Tuxknusum, Salama. Thank you, and welcome to Juno Afternoon on KTOO, your public media station. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also catch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Today, the dual enrollment program via UAS offers high school students the opportunity to get a jump start on their college career. We'll get the details. Deb and Linda are here from the Juno Commission on Aging with some info on upcoming AARP events and more. And Betsy Longenbaugh and Ed Schoenfeld are back with more Death with Dessert. It's more mystery and murder in the capital city with these historical sleuths. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. And a special programming note, join us in a live studio audience special Juno Afternoon on Friday, April 10th. It's Folk Fest next week. The show will feature the guest dance band of the Folk Festival, the Red Hots. Bring your dancing shoes. Arrive by 2:45 in the studio downstairs here at KTOO on Friday, April 10th. And just for funsies, let's have a little taste of the Red Hots right now. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
And grass, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin talk anakaya ha anikak gunish cheese.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on community-supported KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. The University of Alaska Southeast welcomes registration of high school and homeschool students who are prepared for college-level work via their dual enrollment program. I welcome now to the studio to share more with us. I have Jessica Dean from the University of Alaska Southeast, and I also have Nate Dutton from the Juno School District. Gunath Cheesh, Ha'iyadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in here. Jessica, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us. We appreciate the opportunity to share about dual enrollment.
Of course. And Nate, how are you today?
Boston, I'm doing great. I'll tell you what, the weather's me feeling good.
Yeah, it sort of gives us a new energy, right? Like, yeah, I was talking about that with my partner. She and I were talking about it. Just like, it's so, It's so close. Like, it's just, it's here.
It's going to happen.
It feels like it's been a while, but it's really nice. And you know what else is so close is high school graduation for some folks this year, but you can get a head start. I know when I was in high school, I don't know if they still offer it, Nate, but I had the opportunity in Anchorage to have early dismissal or late arrival. Mm-hmm. You could take a period or two, not take classes. I was a sleeper, so I took late arrival because, you know, they make you go to school at that really early hour.
Sure.
And back in the day, I think we had to be there at like 7:30 or something. It was...
Times have changed, Boston.
I know. High school doesn't start till like 9:30 now,
9:30,
right?
Yeah.
That's way more reasonable.
You would do well.
I would do well.
Mm-hmm. And there's even options for morning classes if you want them. We call them 0 hour.
Oh,
which,
nice.
You know, back in your high school days, it probably started at like 6:30 was your 0 hour.
I don't know if we had those, yeah.
But our 0 hour, you know, it starts at like 8:15.
That's perfect.
Oh, so, it's beautiful.
You're so much more awake and alive. Yeah, it's so good. But the opportunity presents itself. If you do get enough credits going in high school, you have some opportunity, right, to maybe get a jump start on college. I know my daughter did this down in Washington with the program there in Washington State to get it going. And by the time she got to college, a lot of her, like, you know, general education stuff was done, you know. So tell me a little bit about this program, Jessica, how it started, what it's all about.
Yeah, so how it started, I couldn't tell you. I'm the new girl for sure. Okay. Dual enrollment has been around for probably since the 80s. It can come in many different forms, but what's going on right now is kind of this renewed interest of having that flexibility in the scheduling like you were talking about. If you're a sleeper, you can sleep in. A lot of kids, especially from Southeast, are just extremely active, involved in so many activities and sports, athletics, and on the road constantly. And then there's kids who are just curious. They want to explore options, like maybe for life after high school, whether they're interested in maybe being a nurse or interested in health sciences. They want to explore what it would be like to be a welder, or they want to decide if maybe they want to study psychology in college and what does that look like, and they want to take a psych class. So there's so many different reasons to take dual enrollment. As varied as a student's life is, that's what they come to us for to fulfill.
So does dual enrollment means they're basically enrolled in high school and at the university at the same time?
Exactly right. Any okay. high school. So you could have had left high school and not completed it and not had a GED. If you're if you have not graduated from high school yet, you're considered dual enrollment. So
I see.
You could be in a homeschool program. Okay. You could have your GED. You could just be at a public school and be dual enrolled. Yeah. Once you have graduated from high school and you or if you've declared a major, then you move on to big kid college, regular college. Yep.
So now you mentioned a couple of the classes people could explore. Yep. What classes are open to people to take at the university? Is it any class they want?
You got it. Okay. Any class you want. So, of course, you have to, depending on the class that you're interested in, if you're taking a general education requirement class, you would take a placement test like anybody would for math or English and writing. And then that would give us a better idea of what your aptitude is, and we want you to be successful. So put you in a class that you're going to learn and do well in, be challenged. But then there's plenty of classes that there are no placement tests involved for. So, yeah, you can take anything that you're interested in that you're able to be successful in.
Okay. Yeah. And, Nate, we're talking about we're aging myself here, but we're talking about when I was in high school. I remember – you know, a lot of the folks took the AP classes, like the advanced placement classes, I guess that's what it was called, and you got college credit for that. Is that still a thing?
We do still offer some AP classes.
Okay.
In different subjects. Where my expertise lies is dual enrollment within career and technical education.
Okay.
So we have made most of our career and technical education classes dual enrollment. For example, our Woods 1 and our Woods 2 classes.
Okay.
We have amazing staff members and Jake Jacoby and Andy Bullock that do our construction and our Woods classes and our small engines classes, house build classes, welding classes, and all those classes do have dual enrollment. And we as the school district actually utilize our federal Perkins funds, and we pay for the kids' tuition in those dual enrollment classes. So we remove all barriers for kids to receive that college credit, to earn that college credit.
Yeah, that's going to be a question is cost. I'll get to that in just a sec. But so what did you call it? Career
and technical education, CTE.
CTE, career and technical education. And it sounds like a lot of those classes are, in a sense, vocational classes. Is that?
Yeah, they would be termed as vocational classes. Okay. The federal government has moved away from calling them vocational, and okay. they've kind of put the label of career and technical education on okay. them now. But yes, you would consider them vocational classes.
I see. Did vocational have like a bad, a connotation or something at one point or no?
Yeah, I would say it did. Vocational classes did receive
made it seem like not real college.
Correct.
Right, but it is.
Or people, you know, I've heard people say before, you don't want to be a ditch digger for the rest of your life. Well, actually, that person who's running that piece of machinery is providing an amazing service,
yeah.
and they're getting paid a pretty good wage.
Yeah, people get paid pretty well to mm-hmm. do that, yeah. So, and that is the center that's across from JDHS, right, which is the technical college. Is that where some of those classes take place?
We do have some partnerships with the University of Alaska Southeast at the Tech Center there. And so, yes, some of those classes take place there. Most of them, though, do take place in our JDHS buildings.
Oh, okay.
The ones that take place across the street is the UAS has been an amazing partner in being able to offer classes that are just college classes, but they offer them at a time that high school students can take advantage of them.
Mm.
So they offer some college classes in career and technical education in what we call the 0-hour time slot.
I see.
So they've adjusted their whole schedule to accommodate high school students that want to go over and take a college class over there in the morning.
Yeah, I think I was talking to somebody last year about the welding classes,
yep.
things like that, and they can just walk over the bridge mm-hmm. and go to the college over there, which is kind of cool.
Yep,
it's really
and
great.
Students really love it because they get a parking permit if they're enrolled in a CTE class.
That's the bonus.
There's
right?
the bonus. There's a bonus. Exactly right.
Important yeah. things to those. I mean, hey, parking's important to everybody.
Yeah.
Right. So how does it work, Jessica? In terms of like, how do I get my kiddo enrolled in this? How do I get what's the details of it?
Yeah, so there's two answers to that. So if you're a high school student at JDHS and you're interested in a CTE class, you're going through your high school counselor, you're working with Nate, you're figuring out what your interests are, you're enrolling that. That's part of your daily schedule. And then Nate and I work together behind the scenes and hopefully make it as seamless as possible. Mm. We are running into hiccups, but we're working on it. And we get the paperwork processed to get those credits on those students' transcripts. So they would be on both their high school and their college transcript.
I see.
So okay. that's a matter of filling out a form and filling out a parent permission slip, which is super important, parents, if you're listening.
So they need that permission slip to make that happen.
Right.
Okay.
So that's one example of how you can get involved with a dual enrollment class. The other example is if you're not going through the high school and you are independently interested in taking a dual enrollment class, you would apply for admission as a high school student. It's a less than 15-minute process. We don't need a transcript or anything. You're just saying, I'm a high school student. I want to take some college classes.
Mm, okay.
And you meet with me as your advisor, and we talk about what your goals are, what you're interested in. What are the supports that you have at home, or what supports are you lacking that would contribute to your success at UAS? And then we talk about all the resources that the university has for you, walk you through the steps to taking placement tests, and then picking out classes. Some people will just take one off. Some will take up to 12 credits a semester, a full-time student. And the goal is to have a meaningful path forward, right? So to either be exploring what your interests are in the future or to be working towards an occupational endorsement. It's possible to have an associate's degree before you graduate from high school. It's not super common here yet,
right.
but we're working.
Getting
towards,
there.
Yep.
Getting there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just want to be clear. So there's really two sits of the dual enrollment, right? Because the CTE classes that take those, you said a lot of those take place at the high school.
Correct.
But other classes that are dual enrollment, I'm actually going out to the university.
You're doing a lot of things. You can go out to the university on campus and sit in a classroom with a professor and learn just as you would kind of imagine college to be. Or you can take an asynchronous class where it's completely online. Mm. There's no set meeting times. You're going and you're learning, you're using, what is called Blackboard. JSD uses something called Canvas. It's a learning platform where all of your modules, your videos, all of your instructions are there for you. And there's a timeline. So you're doing it all on your own. Super popular with students, especially the really busy ones that are on the road a lot.
To be able to do it at their own
pace. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yep. And then there's also a hybrid model where it's hybrid. So it's partially online, and then there is set meeting times where you're meeting with your class and your faculty and like sitting on a Zoom
class. I see. Okay. Yep. And then my other clarifying question here is, so I know you mentioned that a lot of the funds that you get, Nate, are used to offset the cost for the CTE classes. What about the other the other classes, Jessica?
Yeah, so the generosity of Juneau School District, we cannot overemphasize it. It's a fantastic opportunity for these students because a 3-credit class, if you were to walk into the university with tuition and fees, it's right around $1,000, which is some of the lowest tuition in the country, but it's still $1,000, right? Mm. So we also offer a partnership with the University of Alaska Fairbanks where we participate in the Alaska Advantage Program, which is, we're going to get into the weeds here for a second.
Yeah.
Any 100 or 200 level asynchronous course is eligible for basically a 50% tuition discount.
I see. Okay.
Put you right under $500, which is still a big chunk of change. But then we also have scholarships and tuition waivers available for students.
So you're trying to make it possible and accessible
Absolutely.
To everybody who
Yep.
wants to do this.
Yep. And a lot of our outlying communities and school districts that aren't able to offer diverse classes, they'll often partner with us as well. And some of those school districts will kind of do what Juneau School District is doing with CTE and fund a class. They don't have a teacher that will teach a humanities class. They just don't have the staffing or the funding, and so then they'll enroll their students in UAS classes.
I see. Yep. Okay. And then I'm curious, what's the, I guess, success rate, or how do you find that students react to this program? What do you see from the students and the feedback you get?
That's a really good question, and I wish that if Kristen's listening, she'd be like, this is on your dashboard, Jessica. You could access this data. There are numbers to show that dual enrollment students actually succeed at a greater rate than first-year freshmen. First-year freshmen do a great job, but our dual enrollment students are really driven, and we work really hard to help them understand what their responsibilities are and what their supports are. And the idea is, so when you get to college or to whatever pathway you choose after high school, you're ready. You've done it. You've experienced it. You know what it's going to look like. So the pass rates are very high for dual enrollment students.
And I bet that there's a lot of folks who take some classes here at UAS through this dual enrollment program to maybe get close to the AA, but or at least get some of those gen eds out of the way before they go off to the more expensive school outside
or
something like that.
Yep.
And they're already ahead of the game, and they kind of get a sense of like what college level courses are going to be like, and that's where maybe that success rate comes from. I'm wondering.
I think you're right, and I think a lot of that is when you're starting out at college, no matter where you're deciding to go, it's a whole new system, and it's learning form literacy and understanding what all their different platforms and their registration and just navigating that. That's a huge barrier for students. So the dual enrollment opportunity. You know, they get to try that out. They have to register themselves. I'm there to help them and walk beside them and do it all. But, you know, they're experiencing it kind of in the safety of their home school environment and in their home environment.
So. And Nate, what kind of feedback do you get from the CTE students in terms of the program?
Oh, we get absolutely great feedback. Most students are very thankful that we provide that opportunity for them. And most that enter those classes, they never realize that they would have the opportunity to earn college credit with their high school class. Mm. And the only reason that is possible is, again, through partnerships with UAS and the fact that we have amazing instructors. Mm. Our instructors are vetted through UAS that said, yes, you can teach at a college level. You can teach these subjects at a college level. So we have those kind of instructors in the Juneau School District.
And it's
absolutely amazing that the kids get that kind of experience and that kind of exposure in high school.
So final question for you. How do I get more information? Where do I go? Where do I begin?
Yeah, you're going to go to the UAS website, and in the search box, you're going to type in dual enrollment. And my page is going to pop up. It's in the process of being kind of revamped a little bit, but my contact information is there. You can schedule an appointment, Zoom, phone, in person, and talk about what your goals are, how to get you connected with dual enrollment.
I love that. Is there anything from CTE that we need to know about a website, or does it all go through? Can we start with Jessica?
Well, our high school counselors are fantastic,
they're
ones that can really advise these kids, and it's their job to advise these kids on the classes and the opportunities available. So they would be the first point of contact for high school students.
I gotcha. Okay. Yep. Jessica, Nate, thank you so much for coming and telling us about the dual enrollment program. Is there anything else that we needed to mention about it? Did we get it all?
We have a couple events coming up that are dual enrollment involved. Women in Mining is sponsoring a luncheon on April 24th at 12:30 at the Tech across the Sky Bridge from JD. It's open to all all women, high school students or not. And then there's also a health sciences open house. It's virtual. It's on April 7th at 4 p.m. So anybody of any age that's interested in exploring health sciences is welcome to come as well.
That's next Tuesday. April 7th,
yep.
Right?
April 7th, absolutely. Yeah.
And
yep.
Can we get that information on the dual enrollment page at
for
the
sure.
UAS?
Yep.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much, Gunatish, for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Boston.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017.
Take all your dumb luck and bend it. Lay it on the hill to feed the crows. I'm sure soon you'll regret it. Like all those symphonies you compose. But oh, honey, I love you. Maria said she'd take you dancing if you just follow her to Rome. I never dodged so many questions from a woman with a bag of stones. But oh, honey, I love you. You write your letters in a frenzy. Dedicate them to the sun. I heard the others are in envy, 'cause they have never received one. The storm is racing.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That was a little Dara Lados with her song Envy. She performed that here in the studio last year during Folk Fest, and she will be performing Monday night for sure. I'm sure she has many other gigs throughout the week, but Monday night she'll be at the Music in the Jungle down at the Pottery Jungle. They're doing a whole week of music down there at the Pottery Jungle during a Folk Fest. So you can check that out. Dara Relatos, wonderful local Juno singer-songwriter. I am joined now by Deborah Craig and Linda Kruger from the Juno Commission on Aging for this month's update from the Commission and from the AARP. Gunatish Haiyad, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to see you both again. Wasiati Deb, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for hosting us.
Of course. And Linda, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. Yeah, we're happy to be here.
Excellent. So what's happening? We got a lot going on. You want to start with the AARP?
Let's start first with AARP. And in general, we'll start with seniors in actually April. We're in April now, even though it looks snowy and wintry outside. April is Volunteer Appreciation Month.
Okay.
And so we're appreciating all the volunteers in Juno, but also recognizing that a lot of seniors and older people in Juno volunteer in the community.
Absolutely.
In all kinds of ways.
And it's almost like your phrase, aging is so cool, everybody's doing it. Volunteering is so cool, everybody's doing it.
Exactly.
You could do
right.
The same model.
Exactly right. And when you're an older person and you don't have to work anymore, you have time for lots of volunteering.
Right. And that's one of the things that, like you guys have mentioned many times on the show, but getting out of the house, getting social events, not staying at home. Yep. And now that we're way past that horrible thing that was from a few years ago, keeping everybody inside, there's a lot more activity happening,
And so many ways you can volunteer where you can have a sense of purpose, which is also something that's really, really important as we get older. And so all kinds of reasons and all kinds of opportunities in Juno to volunteer. So that's number one. Number two is a fraud event that's coming up. And Deb and I were just talking. I just came from a friend's house. She had two fraud messages on her phone that looked real.
There's one that's going around around the DMV one,
exactly.
Right?
That's that one of them was the DMV mm-hmm. one, and I got it, and my partner Jeff got it, and mm-hmm. our licenses are going to be revoked and whatever if we don't respond by midnight tonight, blah, blah, blah.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. It's fraud. And so on April 16th, that's in 2 weeks, we're sponsoring a fraud event at the Valley Library from 10 to 12, and I'll be doing a little PowerPoint presentation about fraud and how to identify it and how not to be taken advantage of. And then we'll have a guest from the FBI in Anchorage who's coming down to talk to us about fraud.
Sweet.
And so he'll be here, and that's the 16th of April from 10 to 12 at the Valley Library. And there'll be a flyer. There'll be flyers around town. I think the library has taken, and this is co-sponsored with the library.
Okay.
And library's taking care of getting flyers up all around town. So
Tell me again when it is, April 16th?
April 16th from 10 to 12 at the Valley Library.
Valley Library, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, then, I think that's so, I just think that's so important. Like the idea of understanding, the world is so complicated these days. We all have these devices on us all the time, and we get the email, and we can't discern which one is which or what sound. They're getting so good at sounding real.
Yes, exactly.
And the links look real, and you have to really double check and take your time. And they prey, these people prey on your fears of like missing out or owing money or, you know.
Or missing out on an opportunity. I got one last week from Costco. Looked like it was really Costco. Mm. And another one from Starbucks that looked like it was really Starbucks. And neither one of them were real. They were both fake.
Yeah.
So
junk.
So be really careful and come to the fraud event April 16th from 10 to 12 at the Valley Library.
Awesome.
And just really quickly, another one, it's not coming up until May 20th, but put it on your calendar. May 20th from 3 to 5 at the Douglas Library we're going to be celebrating Senior Recognition Day and recognizing older persons in our community who have made contributions and been such an important part of our community.
Oh, so that's fantastic.
More about that coming up.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll hear that on one of the other months that you're here. Maybe next month, because that's in May, right?
That's in May. Okay. Yeah. So that's a couple of months away.
Okay. Excellent.
Thanks, Linda. And really, we encourage everybody to attend this fraud event because it's happening on a lot of different levels. Mm-hmm. Many people that are on Medicare have experienced Medicare fraud.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm sure they'll do at this workshop is talk to you about how to report fraud. Yeah. But if you do see fraud on your Medicare, which is one of the big venues for fraud to occur, medical providers pretending that they've done something, giving you catheters or whatever, and charging Medicare, you need to call it in. Call your Medicare office and make sure you let them know that that's occurring, because that helps them to target those entities so that down the road they don't get paid.
So are you saying like a business would be doing this?
Yes.
Or is it somebody pretending to be a business?
They're people pretending to be a business, a medical provider of some sort, and they charge Medicare for things like 500 catheters, or they were charging people for orthopedic gear, and it was all fraud. And if you check your Medicare statement every month, which if you're over 65 and you're on Medicare, you should do that to make sure that you aren't being hit up for these fraudulent charges and report it to Medicare when it happens.
Wow. That's I hadn't heard of that before.
Super big deal. Wow. Super big deal for Medicare, because we want Medicare to stay solvent.
Yeah.
And the way to do that is to make sure that we don't have these fraudulent events occurring.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. What else is happening?
Well, so the other thing that's happening is we encourage everybody to Google, go to their the Juno Commission on Aging website. And if you Google Juno Commission on Aging, you might get the Alaska Commission on Aging, which has some really good information too. But if you go to the Juno Commission on Aging website right now, you're going to see some really cool information about making your home more age-friendly.
Oh, nice.
Michelle Hill, who is a former assembly member, recently wrote, and some people might have already read, wrote a letter to the editor about experiencing an injury that resulted in a surgery that resulted in her being fairly impaired for some period of time, and realizing how unfriendly her house was for somebody who is experiencing those kinds of issues. So AARP has really led the charge in terms of age-friendly housing issues. And if you go to our website, you'll see that we have a link to what's called the Home Fit Guide.
Mm-hmm. Home Fit Guide.
And you just click on the Home Fit Guide. Again, it's an AARP tool. We're so thankful
online.
That AARP provides all these tools for seniors. Go to this guide and just peruse it and look through your own house and say, gee, what is it in my house that could be more age-friendly or could be less injury-producing?
Mm.
So, and the other thing we're trying to promote is the idea of do it before you need it. I had an Achilles surgery a couple years ago. I was like, oh my goodness, I am non-weight bearing. I can't walk for 2 months. Mm. How am I going to get up my stairs? How do I get up the threshold? How do I even get into my house after a doctor's appointment? And so thinking about these things before you might have to think about them, and this impacts everybody of all ages. You can have a surgery at 20. You can have a surgery at 5. You can have a surgery at 70. All of these things happen throughout life. And so just looking at your house and saying, what are some of the things that I can do? And we're kind of promoting the idea of different elements that you could build into a house at construction, or you could remodel after you've already purchased the home. So things like a low or no threshold, a covered entry, 32-inch wide doorways, one floor of housing, or a stairway that's straight, because you could get a chairlift up a straight stairway.
Oh, sure.
Whereas if it has a curve to it, like in my house, it's going to make it a lot more challenging. Wide bathrooms with zero step shower, extra grab bars and handrails. And you can actually buy these. Yes.
You read my mind, because I was just thinking, I love the idea of a step shower, because that is a thing that I think can trip up. You don't have any age. Like, you're trying to get out of the shower and you might trip or slip or something.
Slip on the soap.
I'm always looking for the bars, something to grab onto. And you can't grab necessarily the shower curtain because it might fall down.
On your head.
I'm tall, and some people are shorter. They can't grab that. The towel rack, you can't grab that because that's probably not as secure as you want it to be. So are the ones that stick on the tub, are those really good? Like the ones that are the suction cup ones?
I actually use those for my mom, and I actually have them in my own home.
Yeah, okay.
And they have to be monitored. They have a little green light and a red light. So when the lights are green at both ends of the suction, it means you have a strong suction.
Okay.
And it's probably not going to hold your full body weight.
Right, but you just need something for balance.
But for balance. You slipped on the soap, or you got soap in your eyes or whatever. Right. It's something for balance.
Okay.
And then if that suction becomes compromised in any way, it turns red.
Whoa.
So you know, I need to reattach my suction grip bar.
That's
and it
really cool.
Works great.
Okay.
So, there's a lot of benefit to doing this stuff. So these age-friendly upgrades make your house more accessible, not just for the elderly, but for anybody, for anybody of any age, kids, young families with lots of kids, et cetera. Age-friendly increases the value of your home, makes it more sellable. And it's also something, there's lots of programs in town, and we won't talk about this now because we're out of time, but there are lots of programs in town that actually assist with these kinds of services, like building ramps and things like that. So if you have a need for something like that, you can call SALE and the Aging and Disability Services through SALE. You can call Clinkett and Haida if you're a member, SEARCH. Some banks will offer second mortgages to help you to do this kind of stuff. And of course, we're looking towards maybe more assistance through the city for these kinds of things as well.
I see.
So think about how age-friendly your house is. Go to our website, pick up our cool little home fit guide, and walk through your house. It goes room by room through your house. So you can walk through your house and say, what are the things that I could do immediately, like remove those slippery rugs that I could fall on? And what could you do with maybe some modifications? And what might you think about if you're a senior and you want to move into some new housing?
Do you have any recommendations for stairs that are wood or slippery? What should you get there? Do you have anything like that? Do you have the mats, or what do you use?
There are sticky mats that you can attach to stairs.
Uh-huh.
And actually, wood stairs with sticky mats are a little bit better than carpet, because carpet has a slipping quality. And so just thinking about things, if you're doing remodeling, think about, as I'm aging, or if I have kids in the home, or if I'm going to have an elderly parent in the home, or if I'm going to have somebody in the home that experiences a disability, how are they going to be able to navigate my house? I had a friend recently who said, our home is no longer accessible to a disabled friend and an elderly parent. because there's steps going down to the house and just the access is really difficult. So thinking about this kind of stuff can help you also be more welcoming to your family and friends.
And I'm really curious, maybe we can talk about this next time because we are out of time, but the idea of like when you're not an owner of the home and you need to figure out the ways to do that without the permission necessarily to install stuff or, you know, redo things. Like that would be really curious because not everybody's in the situation where they can just do it, you know, own it.
And you know, owners, when you do that, you increase the property value.
Oh, you do.
And so some owners might say, great,
go
because
for
that
it.
Increases my opportunities for rentals in the future.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Okay.
So talk to your landlord and say, I would just like to put up a couple of grab bars. What do you think?
Yeah.
And see how that rolls with them.
I love the green and red thing. I need to get into that.
Yes.
So thank you so much.
They're awesome.
Well, good to teach Linda and Deb from the Juneau Commission on Aging, the event for the AARP on April 16th. Get your information out at the Valley Library on scams. And I love that there's somebody from the FBI coming because they'll tell you the real deal.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Yes. Really appreciate you being here. We'll see you next month.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Boston. We really appreciate Juneau Afternoon.
Good to teach. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Side performed here in the studio last Folk Fest. Liz Snyder will be back for Folk Fest this year. I think she's performing on Monday with Whiskey Class over at the Pottery Jungle, as well as she's reuniting with Alice Cutlars for a special Wool Pullers concert next Saturday night, April 11th, I believe. So you can check all that out at the Pottery Jungle. It's really cool. Folk Fest is almost here. I know our next guest will also be performing during the Folk Fest, as he has for many years. But let me give the proper introduction here. This is Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. Betsy Longenbaugh and Ed Schoenfeld are back with more Death with Dessert, these historical sleuths. have been tracking down and detailing murder and mayhem in the capital city for several years now. Their presentations are always entertaining and informative. And Betsy has authored three books of true crime, two nonfiction and one fiction. And her latest is out now, More Forgotten Murders from Alaska. She'll be doing a special signing of that book on Sunday, April 19th at the Douglas Library, 2 p.m., which will include a presentation as well on the history of red light districts in Juneau and Douglas. We had red light districts, Betsy?
Can you believe it?
All over the place.
Not all over the place. They were very discreet.
They had the house light with the light on, and that meant it was open and ready to go?
They had whole neighborhoods.
Oh, the whole neighborhoods. Oh, wow. So you're going to do that signing on Sunday, April 19th in that presentation. Mm-hmm. So that's really nice. Well, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
It's nice to see you both again. And Ed, I was referring to do you want to pitch your performance?
Well, the Empty Oil Barrel Band will perform satire and parodies Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. during the Alaska Folk Festival. So that's my band with Riley Woodford and Jane Andrean and Maggie Schoenfeld. And also I'll be emceeing Sunday night.
And how many years have you been performing at the Folk Fest?
I performed since 1980. So
19, well, can we count that high?
Do the math.
Yeah.
A long time. A long time. You've been, and that's pretty much every year, right?
Yeah. I've never, the only year I missed were the COVID year or years.
Yeah.
No, I've always played.
That's so great.
Didn't really set out to do that, but my first festival was 1979, but I didn't realize how open it was to musicians.
Oh,
so
I see.
Next year, I signed up for my 15 minutes, and
there you go. And a lifelong adventure. That's so cool. And this adventure both started for you, just to remind folks, it started for you sort of post-retirement. Mm-hmm. You were both reporters. Mm-hmm. You were both doing all kinds of things in your lives. And then you retired. And this idea of investigating murder and mayhem in the capital city sort of arose.
It did. It did. It was based on some interest in probably Alaska's or certainly Juneau's most famous historic crime, which was a murder that resulted in the Birdman of Alcatraz going to prison for the first time. Mm-hmm. And once I read about that, I started thinking about, what about all those other murders nobody's ever heard about? I'm sure there was murder going on, so what was that? And so that's when we started our research.
I see. And these ones that are coming up, we have one April 11th, which is the Saturday of Folk Fest, which is kind of cool. So a little anti-Folk Fest programming.
Yeah, I know. Being assisted in by my pro Folk Festival husband.
Well, but it's 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah,
there isn't much going on. There's not a lot going on at 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah,
there's
the afternoon Folk Fest thing, but the nighttime, the nightlife is really where Folk Fest is at,
exactly,
I guess. But this one on April 11th at 3 p.m. Is called A Bad Day at the Office. So tell me a little bit about this. This is new.
It is. It's a story about workplace violence. And frankly, I don't know. I can't think of another workplace violence crime that's occurred in Juneau ever. Mm. That doesn't mean they haven't. I just don't know of one. Do you, Ed?
Certainly not before statehood.
No. And so this was prior to statehood, just prior to statehood. And somebody got really, really angry at the commissioner of health, at the territorial commissioner of health, and decided that he needed to kill him. And
oh my gosh!
Things went badly from there, including he ended up killing someone else.
Oh no!
The poor woman who opened a door. But it's a really interesting story because it talks a lot about some important things that were happening in Alaska at that time, particularly the tuberculosis epidemic is part of this story, believe it or not, and the asylum that the Territory of Alaska contracted with from 1903 until the Alaska Psychiatric Institute was built. So decades, they contracted with an organization called Morningside Hospital down in Portland, and many, 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 many Alaskans went there, almost all of them involuntarily.
Oh, wow.
And that's a whole huge story that we're going to be talking about and is, again, really part of this story.
And you mentioned here in the plug for it that it also talks a little bit about economic woes. There's something going on at the time of this you know, this tragedy that was happening for this person or that was happening around the
well,
the
because
town?
Because he was diagnosed with TB, he couldn't work.
Oh, I see.
And this was a man who had worked hard all of his adult life and supported himself, didn't have family, had bought a house, was living comfortably on his hard, hard labor, and is stopped from working.
Oh, wow.
And it was very devastating for him. And he wasn't the classic TB patient, which would have been an Alaska Native, was certainly much more commonly the patient of TB than a white man. But his story was so, for us, unique because it involved the workplace violence and the TB and the sanatoriums of the time, which was a whole nother, you know, rabbit hole we delved down into. And then this issue of Morningside.
And just for a reminder for folks, too, you deal with stuff that's happened at least, what was the year you cut off at?
Statehood, 1959. Statehood,
59. Okay. 59.
Yeah. So. And when we first did our tours, we included more recent cases, some of which I had covered when I was a reporter or edited when I was an editor. But we kept finding people showing up who were directly connected to it. Oh, I know the killer. He was in my kindergarten class.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he bartended at my wedding. Or, I was an alternate on the jury and sat through
a little too
that.
Close and, to home.
Yeah, it's way just, too close
you know,
to home.
We're talking about history here.
Yeah.
Not really wanting to poke people. So anybody in these stories who died would be dead anyway because it was so long ago.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's why
and
I like.
Plus, the world was different then, and that's a lot of what we talk about.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And you're relating it today because it's interesting because workplace violence is a thing.
So that's
interesting to come up with. And I love that, you know, sort of the historical sleuth aspect of it. Like I like that term for it. I thought of that.
I like that.
Yesterday.
You just coined that right now. I'm very impressed.
Yeah. It was like I thought of it and I was like, I like that because sleuthing is so.
Yes.
Because really you're doing a lot of work. This isn't information that is just out there and available. You're digging up like microfiche and you're going through all these old ways of collecting this knowledge, newspapers and things like that, you really have to sleuth it out and you're like putting the pieces together and figuring out where all these things fit.
All the fun stuff.
Yeah.
So one way to think about this is you are not ever going to be able to get on the Google and find out anything about these stories.
Yeah, it's not on Wikipedia.
No.
Probably. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It is not. And that was what, of course, drew us both to them originally was just this knowledge that there are these amazing stories out there that people have completely forgotten.
Yeah.
Those who are involved are gone. In some cases, people who are children of either victim or defendant don't really know much about it or want to talk about it. Because I have sometimes reached out to family members, and generally speaking, they really aren't interested in pursuing this.
Put it underneath. Yeah.
Understandable. This would have been very difficult for any family to deal with.
Yeah, for sure. That one's called A Bad Day at the Office. It's April 11th at 3 p.m. Now, we do want to remind folks that these are fundraisers for the Trinity Church. You can go to trinityjuno.org for tickets.
Yep, and there are tickets.
There are tickets for this one.
Absolutely.
These sell out, though.
Yep, they do, and we haven't raised our prices in 4 years.
Yeah.
So they're just $35 a ticket.
Yeah. $35 a ticket.
Plus dessert.
Yeah, you're right. TrinityJuno.org is where you can find out about that. And then, of course, if you want to see or find out about Betsy's books or other stuff that's coming up for these folks, go to truecrimealaska.com. But there's more because on May 9th at 3 p.m., there's one called A Woman Strangled. Now, tell me about that one. That's right on, that's a nail on the head right there with the title.
Yeah, I remember. I think you said there's not a lot hidden about that title. And that is, again, kind of an amazing, well, they're all amazing stories. This one involves two people, both spouses, they were married to each other, who were what in the time were called remittance people. Mm. Now, growing up in Sitka, we were aware of remittance men in Sitka. And they were, I'm thinking of one person in particular, they were people whose family pretty much paid them to stay far away.
Oh.
And as long as they stayed far away from family, they were getting their living expenses paid.
That's what a remittance person is?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when I was studying on about remittance men, a little bit more about it, I discovered that a lot of the original Royal Mounted Police in Canada were remittance men.
Oh, wow.
Because it was a British term. It was typically, originally it would have been British families sending their ne'er-to-do-well, you know, sons over to Canada. And then once they were there, that was had been an attractive profession for somebody who was ne'er-to-do because they were sort of an exciting occupation, yeah. The Royal Mounted Police. And again, they would have had a second income source from those families who said stay away.
I love phrases. I love the history yes. of phrases. Do you know where ne'er-do-well comes from?
I do
I'm
not.
I'm just curious. Okay,
no.
I just was curious.
Now I'm going to have to look it up. Thank you so much.
Me too, because I love those terms, where they come from.
Yes.
You know? But so tell me what happens in this story a little bit.
The strangling?
Yeah.
The
remittance person is there.
They're both remittance people.
They're both remittance.
Both the man and the woman. They're American remittance people. Their families have said, you stay away and we'll you know, give
wow.
you money.
Help support you.
And they met pretty quickly after they got here. Within a couple of months, they were met and married. And it didn't go well. It didn't go well to the point where she's killed.
Yeah.
And then what happened after that was also sort of part of the story about remittance men. His family stepped in to try to stop him from any sort of serious punishment.
Oh.
And succeeded to some degree. So
yeah.
it continued. That help from family continued even after a conviction.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's not fun at all.
Mm-mm.
I don't
Mm-mm.
think that's fun. So when we have these talks, what is it that happens at these talks? What's the experience like for folks who come and see these? Are you doing presentations? You got slideshows? What
do.
Happens?
It's a PowerPoint presentation. It's kind of an intimate setting. People are seated at tables.
Mm-hmm.
We offer a dessert that our wonderful daughter baker nurse makes for each dessert.
And it's the only time you can get these desserts.
Oh gosh,
there's no business.
No, and nope. She creates them for that presentation.
So they're like
so
designed.
It's a unique dessert for that presentation.
See, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we have wonderful volunteers from the church who come and help us set up and serve beverages, so we have hot beverages and this lovely dessert. And then Ed is our set the scene guy.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of research into the economy and the setting of that particular area and
time.
Just
to put people in the time and place, mm-hmm. give them a sense of place. And so things from simple stuff like how many people lived in Juneau or Douglas at that time to some of the subtleties. In one of the research things I discovered, for example, that the local hot rodders in the 50s petitioned the city to be able to use one of the, well, it may have been the only runway at the airport for hot rodding when there weren't planes on it. Request denied.
Request denied.
But there were a lot of things like that come up. But just to give you a sense of, you know, what's going on in the world.
Well, the world building, I think, is important because it can play into the circumstances of the case, right?
Yep.
It can play into the sort of the motivation
it
of why things.
It always does.
Yeah,
it always does. You're absolutely right.
And because we're so, and the other thing that I love about this in terms of the historical aspect is we're so like, we have access to everything now. Everything is available. Most things we can see and do, you can find it on the internet really fast. Whereas in, you know, I don't want to say olden times, but previous to, you know, the internet and definitely, you know, let's say prior to the 70s, like things weren't as available. Knowledge wasn't just at the ready, you know, especially here in Alaska, right?
Because, oh gosh, yes.
I mean, we used to have tapes sent up for football games and there used to
news.
Be news. It was a weeks later,
two
right?
Weeks,
later.
Just 2 weeks later.
Just 2 weeks later. Like that, and that really plays into sort of the isolation it could be happening here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then you take like with this woman strangled case, there's two people who are basically getting their expenses paid for in a place that may not be that regulated at the time.
Right.
And that can lead to potentially a lot of trouble.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Not just a place that's not regulated, but a place that must have been very foreign to them.
Right.
And
right,
I think all of us who've moved to Alaska in our adulthood, like my husband did, know how very isolating and foreign it can be when you first come here.
Yeah.
And so I think that plays a role oftentimes in the murders that we study.
Wow. That's so great.
And how easy it is to find yourself hanging out with people who might be a little bit on the shady side of mm-hmm. life, or a lot on the shady uh-huh. side of life, which happens in some of the cases we yeah. research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So let's recap this. So we have April 11th, that's next Saturday at 3 p.m., a bad day at the office. That's going to be happening. And these happen at
Holy Trinity
mm-hmm. Church.
McPheeters Hall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Feeders Hall, okay. And mm-hmm. then you go to trinityjuno.org for tickets and information. Mm-hmm. And then May 9th, a couple months from now, or not that long, actually, no, only no. like a month. What am I talking about, a couple months? Boy, the winter has been long and dark.
No.
Hasn't it? That's a woman strangled. That'll be on May 9th. I'm assuming that's also a Saturday?
It is, and that's okay. our last presentation.
For this season. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then not only that, but then Betsy's new book, The More Forgotten Murders from Alaska, is already out. And she's going to be doing a signing at 2 p.m. on Sunday, April 19th at the Douglas Library. And she'll also talk a little bit about the history of the red light districts in Juneau and Douglas. Mm-hmm. Since we have a couple more minutes, can you tell me a little bit about the red light districts in Juneau and Douglas?
Well, it was interesting to me, but I discovered the term that was very universal throughout the United States anyway, was restricted district.
Restricted district.
So if you came to a community as a single guy and you were looking for a prostitute, you would ask where the restricted district was. Here in Juneau, they called it the line, but it was still, people would have called it the restricted district if you knew what, you know, if you were looking for that. And they were often in both here in Juneau and Douglas, they were set at the end of a street. So the only reason somebody would be walking on that end of the street would be if they were looking for a prostitute.
Now, I know you are both proud and wonderful Douglasites, mm-hmm. you know, or what do you mm-hmm. call it? You call yourself a Douglasite, Ed? What do you call yourself?
We just call ourselves the best people in the world.
Residents of Douglas.
Yes, that's right.
Where was the restricted district in Douglas?
It was on First Street. So the main drag in Douglas was Front Street.
Okay.
And if you know Douglas now, Front Street is between the harbor and the post office.
Yeah.
And that was where all the businesses mm-hmm. were.
Okay.
And then it kind of dwindled down and it turned and went into First Street. And the end of First Street was where the prostitutes were.
Interesting.
So, and it was probably, I don't know, maybe three blocks long.
And wasn't there also a dairy there, or they walked
there? Was
the
a dairy at
there?
The very, very end of the street.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about in Juneau? Where was the restricted
district? In Juneau, it was again at the end of the street. So in those days, if we were heading toward Thane, the first industrial thing we would have seen would have been a sawmill.
Mm.
And after that sawmill was where the line was here.
I see.
And so these are typically little one-room houses, sometimes two-room houses that women would have leased. They had their own business. They would have set themselves up in business in what they called cribs, or these little houses. And most of those, that's what most of the line or the restricted districts were, these little houses. But in some cases, there were larger houses or even brothels on the line or
wow.
the restricted district. Yep.
That's amazing. This is great history, good research.
Mm-hmm.
So fun to hear about what times were like back in the day. Ed Schoenfeld, Betsy Longenbaugh, thank you so much. You can go to truecrimealaska.com and you can find out on their events tab everything that's coming up. These last two presentations are it for this season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there'll
mm-hmm.
be more next year.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing your summer walks and
yes.
talks
we are,
as well?
Starting, I think, May 2nd.
May 2nd.
And these are through the Juneau Douglas City Museum.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure when the museum's on, they'll talk about those.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are happening this summer. Those are also really fun to get involved with. But Betsy, Ed, thank you so much,
Gunna
Cheese, for being here.
Good,
I really appreciate
to you.
It.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. That's going to do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. And special programming note, join us live in the studio next Friday, April 10th, for a special, fantastic Folk Fest Juneau Afternoon with the Red Hots. They're the guest dance band of the Folk Festival. Bring your dancing shoes and arrive by 2:45 downstairs next Friday, April 10th. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Livestream archives are over on KTO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support comes from Country Financial, Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Tongass Federal Credit Union. I'm Boston Christopher. Gonna cheese!